Are we rolling? We are? Okay, cool. Yeah, we're rolling. Thanks for doing the podcast. Okay. Really stupid question for you. Is it herb or herb?
Oh, man. You know, I'm from LA, so for me, it's herb.
Okay.
But I know herb on the East Coast is like a diss. Like, if you call somebody a herb, it's like call them like a dork or like a...
like rosemary?
No.
It's that, like, would be herb, right?
No. It's like the letters H-E-R-B, like the word herb.
Oh.
Like, they would say like, hey, man, you're acting like a herb right now.
Really?
And that's like a diss, yeah.
Really? What does that mean? Like a herbivore? Like what?
I don't know, man. I think a herb is just not a cool name. So like to call somebody a herb is just calling them not cool.
What do you prefer that we call you? Besides not late to dinner. That's an old joke.
a lot of my friends call me Herb. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Herb,
anything
thanks.
But Herbie.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like anything goes. I've been Herbert, Sherbert.
Ooh, I like Warbert, that. Sherbert.
All type of stuff, but anything but Herbie. Herbie, I'm just like too old for Herbie.
Yeah. That just reminds me of like a Lindsay Lohan movie about a car.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for doing the podcast.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm tired. Yeah. There's a lot going on. My mom moved to Portland last weekend. Ooh. And that's been a lot. And then Andy and I are in our 6 month of a kitchen remodel that we're doing ourselves. If you were to ask, oh, do you have construction experience? No, we don't.
Got YouTube University.
Yeah, right? For sure.
Yeah.
And then work is busy. Work is good. A lot of really intentional projects, partnering with a lot of great community organizations as usual. So I really like that. Mm-hmm. I have to learn how to say no. I have to learn how to rest. Mm. I am on a quest, which has been kind of consistent to like, how do you have time off? How do you have time for you? Mm-hmm. How do you like enjoy a movie, but not think about the stuff you have to do, or send emails back on your phone and stuff like that?
It just floats in the back of your mind unless it's resolved. So until you have a method of how to handle it, it's just like those things just always just carried around with you.
Yeah.
Like being present.
Yeah. What's new with you? I mean, you're balancing a lot. Do you want to talk about it?
Sure. Yeah. I'm balancing a lot, I guess, both personally and professionally. You know, I just celebrated my daughter's first birthday, and that was my first child. So, you know, now I can say I'm like a parent of a 1-year-old.
First child? Are you trying to be like Nick Cannon and have 12?
maybe not 12. My wife definitely is going to say no to 12. I'm cool with like 3 or 4, but I think she's like her max is probably going to be like 3.
So, yeah. I think 3 is good. I don't know how people have like 4, 5, 6 kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I know I've got some friends that, you know, they're a family of 12. I grew up really close with them, and
yeah,
I thought it was cool. And I'm seeing it now as like they're grown, you know, like they're all in their like 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Yeah.
And I see how close of a family like they are, like at that age, and now they have their children. And it's like one big family of just like, I don't know. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
To see. I never would have imagined that dynamic.
Was it cool for the kid that was like the oldest that had to take care of the baby?
No, I mean, the mom always held it down. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Nilla Pinkney.
Shout out to a woman for having 12 babies. My goodness.
He was a G. He held it down.
So we were talking about you and I interrupted. So your daughter is one.
Mm-hmm.
What else is new? Work. I know we're going to talk about Sneaker Week too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, personally, you know, really putting my daughter first has been a bit of a challenge, just kind of being new to fatherhood. Because before her, it was all like work in my professional life, like being like the main
focus. I thought you were gonna say before her you were the baby.
I don't know. Yeah, before her, I was the baby. No, before her, yeah, my professional career was like the main thing, and it was the same for my wife. We were both like hella focused on our careers. And now, you know, we want to make that conscious effort of putting her first. I have the flexibility to do that. I was in a previous role at an institution called Pencil, which is now Pencil Lewis College of Design and Business. And I left there about a year and a half ago, and I was doing some consulting work, which gave me a lot of flexibility. And then I had my daughter. And so now that I do have more of a flexible schedule, like, okay, you know, I don't fit into that typical 9-to-5, that kind of corporate gig where I might, you know, just have a block of 8 hours where I can't pay attention to my child. Now I'm flexible enough to where, you know, I can create my own schedule. A lot of it is making sure that she's set first, and then I try to just get stuff done like in the meantime, you know, just like either while she's taking a nap or while, you know, before she's awake or after she goes to sleep. So I get a lot of work done from like 9 or 8 p.m. to like 1 a.m. And then I try to get some work done. She has a nap time between like 12 and 2. And sometimes she's just on Zoom meetings with me. Like, if she's not asleep, she's on a Zoom call.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So, people, I like when babies are on calls or like,
yeah, it's not bad.
You know, a cat or dog. Right? Or...
it's funny. Some people are not personable like that. And they don't like you to be like in their personal space, you know. But I'm not one of those people where like, you know, I don't have the fake screen or whatever. Like, I don't want you to see my house type of vibe. I'm more or less like, hey, this is what's going on. You know, I've got my daughter with me. She needs to eat right now, you know, but
there's a time and place for it. But I also think like, employers realize that if they let people be who they are, you end up feeling more into the company, probably work harder
For sure.
Like, they get you, they know what you're going through.
Yeah.
So your wife, does she do something similar for work?
No, we are the complete opposite. And I feel like it happens a lot, specifically in like this industry, like the footwear industry. When I say that, I know a lot of people that are like in this quote unquote creative role. They're either like a designer or a marketer or something like that. And then they have someone, a partner in like a very analytical role. And my wife is a lawyer. She practices employee benefits. So she works with a company called K&L Gates that's based in Seattle, but she's working remotely now. So we all work from home technically, but yeah, the stuff that she works on is so dense and so like, man, she talks to me about like ERISA and COBRA and like all these acronyms for these laws that have been passed for these, you know, like $1 million companies.
Yeah. So you're like enjoying dinner and talking about retirement.
Man, right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, we don't really get too deep into it. Funny thing is like we're about to head to Paris.
Oh, and, nice.
Like, you know, they've got all that going on right now about like their pensions and stuff like that. My friend was like, he's like, hey man, what are you doing next week? And I'm like, oh man, I'll be out of town. Like, where are you going? I was like, Paris. So I need some reinforcements out there. But yeah, I mean, she's very active in other things as well. She's on the board of a nonprofit. She's done some work, some pro bono work with sex workers. Is that how you would it?
I think
what's
so,
the proper word? I know there's so many terms for it, but basically women, you know, that were sold into.
Oh, well, I think, I think women who, I think sex workers, but women who don't do it of their volition, I think they're trafficked, like human trafficking might be the.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And those things, like, it's not about, at a certain time, it's not even about whether it's interesting or not. It's the fact that they're really important things. I mean, your retirement is really, really important as well. Like, you know, the human trafficking thing is huge. And she's Latina as well. She's Mexican, and she's part Mexican, part Ukrainian as well. But she's part of very active in the HNBA, which is Hispanic National Bar Association.
Nice.
And
sounds like you got a good one.
Yeah. No, she's. I mean, the cool thing about it is, like, she's very passionate about what she does. She's like gives it 110%, and you know, I'm very passionate about what I do. I give it my all as well, and it's. I guess it's like it feels like it's two different worlds, but like we have the same mission. She just has a different approach. You know, like she wants to affect her community by making sure that they're protected, making sure that, you know, they have access to information, like they know the law, like they see themselves represented. And I guess, like, you know, we try to do that same thing through Sneaker Week. It's just in a different field, you know. She was really excited to hear about our collaboration just because, like, she's low-key mentioned it a couple of times of, like, need to be out there educating people on, you know, how to protect themselves, how to, you know how to put their contracts together and stuff like that. And you know, a couple months ago I was like, guess what we're about to do? And you know, she was like, about time. She was kind of salty that it wasn't her firm, but obviously she can't just force a large firm to do anything. But she's just really excited, and I was able to educate her on Rational Unicorn. And so
nice.
Yeah, I mean, she's all for it.
Very cool. Yeah. So you mentioned Sneaker Week, and, you know, I want to talk to you a lot about Sneaker Week, but I kind of want to know first, how did you get into your love of shoes?
Mm-hmm.
What is sneaker culture? What is Sneaker Week? Mm-hmm. Like, take us on a journey of that area.
Yeah, I'm gonna say
I'm embarrassed at my shoes today. I'm wearing really ugly New Balance shoes.
Oh, it's all good. I was very close to wearing some, Hokas.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I've heard those are really good. Do you like them?
They're comfortable, super comfortable. They're like, there was a term called dad shoes, which was popular like in the last like couple years. They're dad shoes, but they're not even like cool dad shoes. They're like dad shoes because they're super comfortable. Like, there's no way that you're going to try to put an outfit together in some Hokas. But if you see somebody in some Hokas, you know, they know the secret is that, like, these are comfortable shoes, and if you don't know about them, then you don't know about them.
So the support, it has good support.
It's got good support. It's got like this little rock to it. Yeah. You know, that's not as prominent as like those Skecher rock shoes for like the elderly.
Is they called Shapes? Shape Ups? Or Shape?
Yeah. Was it? Yeah, like Shape Ups or something like that. Yeah. They just got their own vibe to them. They're really specific runner shoes. There's been a lot of talk around like sneaker culture. There's different explanations on like what sneaker culture is, and everybody has like their own way of defining it. So I'm glad that you are giving me the opportunity to share my perspective. I'm not a sneaker OG by any means, you know, because there's some people that claim the stakes like all the way into like the early 80s and stuff like that. By no means, you know, am I going to claim any type of.
Who would be like the person, like, I'm thinking like Damien and FUBU. And is that kind of.
No, man. It started a lot longer, a lot earlier. I want to say like early hip hop era, maybe like predating hip hop a little bit. But, you know, like I would say like the Run DMC era, yeah. You know, like folks like that.
Public Enemy.
I actually had one of their sneaker collaborations that they did recently, which was really cool. but yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of that originated in hip hop culture in the East Coast. And there's a lot of those folks that are very like gatekeeperish that, you know, want to preserve the culture of like, hey, these are the origins, and I don't debate that at all. I'm just not from the East Coast and I'm not that old. So I have a different perspective, you know. I guess my perspective and I guess it's a little different because people always ask me like, oh man, you're a sneakerhead. Well, what is your, you know, what's your favorite shoe? And they always lead with like, you're a sneakerhead. And I don't agree with that. I think this idea of a sneaker culture, you know, there's different people that fit in within specific culture. And I don't identify as like a sneakerhead. I think that's somebody that's like a collector, that's like obsessed with, you know, all the specific information about a shoe. They're the closest to like the sneaker like nerds that I would but they like to think that it's like, oh, it's super cool, like, you know, I'm a sneakerhead. But it's like, man, you need to embrace it like you're just a sneaker nerd, you know. And it's not, there's nothing wrong with being a nerd about anything. It's just I guess we can all agree like a nerd is somebody that kind of takes it beyond like the average.
Well, it sounds like the collecting might be part of the culture, but is different because someone who's a collector may not be part of the sneaker culture.
Yeah. And I mean, there's different parts of it. Like, you know, there's the athletes. Like, the athletes are part of the sneaker culture, right? Like, they're probably knowledgeable about shoes more than most people, but they're in it for the performance. You know, they're in it for the physical benefits versus, like, the style. You know, and there's going to be those people that are just about the style. There's people that collect shoes that have zero style, you know? And so, like, I think there was an umbrella term that people tried to force on everybody. It was like, okay, hey, you like shoes and you're a sneakerhead, you know? And it's just a fallacy that there's, you know, different types of folks. You know
who else likes shoes is Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City.
I don't even know who that is.
She's the Carrie. She's on Sex and the City, that show.
I don't think I've ever seen
one episode. She's not a sneakerhead.
Is she blonde?
She's blonde, yeah.
Okay, I think I might know who you're talking about.
So when we say sneaker culture...
Did you say Carrie Underwood?
No, not Carrie Underwood. Carrie Bradshaw.
Carrie Bradshaw.
Sarah Jessica Parker. Carrie Bradshaw? Sarah Jessica Parker on Sex and the City. It's all good. Carrie Bradshaw.
Man, right? Yeah. So I'm like very much... I'm not a pop culture guy at all.
That's cool.
I really don't know a lot of pop culture unless it relates to like sports.
You might be better off. I mean, I know all about like Meghan Markle and Prince Harry and stuff like that. I shouldn't. I don't want to. I just somehow soak up.
No, it's I feel like I'm like always left out. You know,
yeah.
Because pop culture, it means that it's, you know, very popular and everybody knows, and it seems like it's common knowledge. And I'm like,
yeah, you know about Kanye and all the bad things he does.
I do know about Kanye. Yeah. I would say sports and music. I would throw music in there. And a little bit of design. I would say that too.
So when we say sneaker culture, what to you is that? I mean, does it relate to just the shoes? Is it music? Is it like being a part of a certain neighborhood or a certain, you know, people who are all wearing cool shoes or hanging out? Like, what, how would you define it? You know, how would you say sneaker culture affects you, relates to you?
So I guess it's been a journey for me to actually get to this point, but it also reflects itself in Sneaker Week, the festival. But when we think about sneaker culture, we think about, there is no sneaker culture without art. There is no sneaker culture without design. There is no sneaker culture without sports. There's no sneaker culture without music. There's no sneaker culture without the media, the storytellers, the marketing behind the shoe itself. There is no sneaker culture without the technology, you know. Everybody knows about the technology in the shoes, you know, like that's part of the draw. Right. And, you know, there is no sneaker culture without the science. And I think all those people have a place and a role within sneaker culture, as well as, you know, the collectors, the athletes, the creatives, the people that are working on it. And so to me, that would be a clearer description of, you know, the full breadth of sneaker culture. And if you are someone that has that specific interest, or you know, finds yourself using a shoe or a process of creating a shoe like as part of your identity, you know, as something that's important to you, mm-hmm. then I think you are a part of that culture and you contribute to that culture mm-hmm. in some capacity. I don't think it's exclusionary as some people think. It's like, oh, I don't have any cool shoes. Like, what does that have to do with anything? You know,
it's what's just, an example of a person, a celebrity or someone who's not a celebrity, you know, that uses their art or their shoe to express who they are? I mean, the old school that I would come up with would be mm-hmm. Michael Jordan and Air Jordan, but
yeah,
that's such an old example.
Well, let's look at Jordan though. Is Jordan a sneakerhead? You wouldn't call him a sneakerhead though. I mean, maybe because he has thousands of pairs of shoes, I'm sure. But he was an athlete, you know, and he was interested about, you know, the performance aspects of it. And he was very involved in like the creation of it, right? And so people don't really talk about like the creators or the athletes as much as the collectors. You know, that's kind of, for some reason, I think media just kind of like bumped it up as like, you know, this collecting and this frenzy. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it was just like, you know, if you had one or two like really dope shoes that nobody else had, like you had some like notoriety, or you had some, you had a leg up on people, you know, it wasn't just about like quantity. It was more or less like quality. Right. So it's just, a evolution, that I think hopefully people don't see it as like, it's being exclusionary, because I think some people, they don't identify with it. They feel like, oh, that's like that's the cool guys club type of deal. Where it's like, if you talk to most people that consider themselves part of sneaker culture, they're just like, they might say, hey man, those are some really dope New Balances, and they might like school you on the shoes that you're wearing, you know, and you probably thought that they sucked, you know? So it's like, yeah. it's not exclusionary at all. It's more or less just like, you got to have those interactions, man. And I think those interactions are important, and it happens over something as simple as like, dude, you know, everybody's got shoes.
And is there someone who you can think of, you know, in the past or present, you're like, I look at the person, I look at who they are, but also, I look at their shoes and I'm like, okay, I look at their shoes and I see who they are. Mm-hmm. Totally makes sense.
Yeah. So my old boss, my mentor, a really important figure in my life, his name is Dwayne Edwards. He's the founder of Pensole. He would always come in with like shoes that you've never seen before. And it's not that they were like super flashy or anything like that. They were like grown man type shoes, you know, like, you know, they were one or two colors. They were always like muted colors.
Like bowling shoes?
They could have maybe looked like bowling shoes. Like they all had like this crazy story to them. And like, if you were anywhere in the design world, you would immediately notice like that his shoes weren't produced in a typical fashion. You know, they were always like some like special process that was applied to the shoe, like either some special material that you've never seen on the shoe before or something like that. And so he wasn't a flashy guy, but he identified with sneaker culture, mm-hmm. and his style reflected in very refined selection of kicks. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was like, it was cool, because the stereotype is like, oh, you got some bright yellow shoes on with a Jumpman on them, you know, that must be acceptable because you're like a sneakerhead, you know, but who else wears like bright yellow shoes, like clowns, you know, or kids, right? And so you don't see, like, now you see adults doing stuff like that, but it's because like this, it's grown to be acceptable because of like, I think, sneaker culture.
You using shoes to express who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
That's so what it all comes down to, basically.
So you mentioned about, you know, we give collectors credit, but not designers. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, how, if, I mean, if there wasn't a designer, we wouldn't have the things we have, but mm-hmm. kind of tell us more about like the shoe design world and why it's important.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's 2023 and now everybody has social media. So the designers are now getting more recognition than they were before internet. And but they still don't get a lot of like recognition as much as like an athlete does, the person that's wearing the shoe, or a famous celebrity that's wearing the shoe, or a collector that can show you this rare collection of things that they have. I mean, the honest answer to that is that brands aren't so keen on designers doing a lot of self-promotion. Mm-hmm. And that's partially to protect the brand, because, you know, you don't want them showing off a bunch of stuff that isn't, you know, is unreleased or things that are still proprietary information, you know, that might, you know, affect the sales of certain products and stuff like that. And, you know, they have a lot of inside information and brands are just very strict on how they share that information. But then the second part of it is just like, brands don't want designers to become bigger than the brand. And then, you know, what stops you from then leaving us and doing your own thing? And now you have a platform and, you know, we're out of a influential designer, you know? So, a lot of brands really don't, they kind of frown on that part. I don't want to say like they tell you that you can't, but it's not like, you know, if you're doing a little bit of too much dancing and stuff like that, like folks will kind of feel like, oh, you're all for you and you're not for the brand. Mm-hmm. But the part that I dislike about that is I'm somebody that identifies as a creative. And I've been, you know, partially why I don't identify as a collector, because I try not to feed into like consumerism much. And I think that there would be a huge switch, and obviously it's not to the benefit of the brand. But if we glorify the creators versus the collectors, then there'll be more people out there creating things versus just buying things, you know? And obviously that's, you know, it's not to their advantage, but it's been something that I really wanted to educate people on, is like, hey, you know, I used to collect shoes, and that was because that was my only interaction with this thing that I loved, which was just like expression mixed with like, you know, art and design, like product design, like all mixed together with like my favorite activity and my favorite sport, like all mixed into one. And the only way I can like experience and enjoy it was to either go to a store and hopefully buy it if it was available, and talk to my friends about it, right? But to now know that, hey, like I can work alongside a designer and create a shoe, or I can work with them to market the shoe and create an entire story and a campaign about, you know, their footwear, or I can, you know, create an experience where we can educate people about, you know, what this shoe means and bring in, you know, folks, then they can maybe like test their own or create their own shoe. That really satisfied that kind of longing that I had for like the creativity, the design and the art, the problem solving, like wrapped all in one. And I just stopped buying shoes. So it was like, you know,
yeah,
that could be the cure for a lot of folks that are right now in just like a really expensive habit of just buying shoes. Just
how many shoes did you have at one point?
A lot, I think, or? I never got over 50. I maybe had like 50 or 60 pairs, but
a lot of shoes.
It was a lot of shoes. It was 50. Unnecessary.
50 pairs, so it's actually 100 shoes.
Man, 100 shoes, about 50 pairs.
Unless you
pairs.
Have 3 feet.
Man, it was ridiculous too, man. My room looked crazy. Didn't even make sense. But yeah, I think if, you know, there's that saying of like, you can't be what you can't see type of thing. And if, you know, all that's promoted and marketed to you is like, oh yeah, you got to be super fly, or yeah, you have to have 50 pairs of shoes, or you know, you're not cool if you don't own this, or if you don't dress this type of way. And it's like, man, what if I want to dress the way that I want to dress? Or what if I want to create something that doesn't exist? You know, what if I want to create something for somebody else, you know, or create something for myself? Like,
it seems costly too. And it's like, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, like if you can barely afford to get by, but then you're buying expensive collectible shoes.
Yeah. That's what's sold to you though. Honestly, yeah. I mean, if you look at just scrolling through all these paid partnerships on Instagram, or, you know, if you see something, you know, a commercial on YouTube, you know, it's like the same thing over and over and over and over and over.
So if I have this, I'll be happy. Or if I have this, I'll be cool.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And it really impacts these kids' decisions, you know. And so, like, I'm really focused on youth and how we can either, you know, nurture the next generation, or either empower like the current creatives that are, you know, looking to make a difference now, you know. And that, and I think that's why, you know, a collaboration with Rational Unicorn was so important and so seamless. But yeah, it's not enough of that happening. You know, so it's weird to be in this space of the dominant culture is sell, 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 and you being part of like a counterculture, quote unquote, of like, no, let's educate, 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 which is just, that doesn't that seem backwards? I mean, it doesn't seem backwards. Yeah. It sounds
Well, we'd be here all day if you know, like, you know, I'm upset with the healthcare system, upset with how we pay teachers. I'm up, you know, we'd be here. But yeah, I mean, education to me is a priority for anything. I mean, and you're absolutely right with our youth, educating our youth, not just educating them, but giving them tools and resources to protect their creativity. So important. So tell me about Sneaker Week, PDX, how it got started, what it is, that sort of thing.
I'll go into my spiel. I've been practicing. I've got about 7 years of practice. So Sneaker Week is a 7-day festival that we host here in Portland. For a lot of people that are part of the sneaker culture, they understand that Portland is the sneaker capital of the world. It holds the majority of, I guess I want to say, like, the product that is produced out here in this $75 billion industry. You know, they're accountable for a large portion of that.
Is that because of Nike and the Nike Adidas, or as they call it, Adidas?
Adidas, yeah. You have Nike out here in Beaverton, which is, you know, just right out of Portland, North Portland. You have Adidas North America headquarters. You also have Columbia Sportswear. Under Armour just moved out here not too long ago. They're kind of in Southwest.
Outlet. I need an Under Armour outlet.
Man, right? No, they got their like their Eastern like design campus out here. Western design campus out here. They have
Danner
Boots. Lululemon just moved out here. They have a On Running has an office out here. So it goes on and on. And really, it's because Portland is a hub for that talent, that creative talent that I was talking about before, that's not marketed. You know, there's a plethora of talented designers, creative marketers, developers, you know, all the people that are a part of, you know, bringing that product to life. And yeah, good luck trying to convince somebody to move to Utah, you know, that, you know, has established those roots here in Portland. And so, Portland has become like that mecca. And basically what we've tried to do as an organization, through experiential marketing, we create different experiences and events within that 7 days to connect folks that are part of the sneaker culture and part of the sneaker community to the footwear industry, all those different opportunities, educating them on different roles that are part of bringing a shoe to life. And it's really based on, you know, one of those seven interests, whether it is art, design, sports, music, media, science, or technology. You have an interest, you know, we have an event and experience that connects you to like-minded folks, and to, you know, brands that come in and support.
So, very cool. Mm-hmm. And you have a co-founder?
Yeah. Yeah, so how it all got started was, you know, between myself at that time, I was working at a place called Pencil, and it's a footwear design academy, and it's really the inspiration for Sneaker Week as well. It was basically a pipeline for aspiring designers to get like real world experience working on real projects with brands. So the brands would come in and sponsor a class. We would do outreach and find students that were kind of what the brands were looking for. And they would work on projects, and some of those projects would actually go to retail. And so I was the marketing director there. And I went from just a marketing designer, creating some of the assets, to marketing manager, to the director. And the time that I was there, I had a good relationship with Wacom. And for those who know Wacom, either, you know, whether you're a photographer, you know, working with like creative software, a lot of times you use like their products, which are like those big tablets that you can draw on and stuff like that. And kind of like my counterpart for Wacom, her name was Megan Davis. Megan and I would work on a bunch of different projects of like, hey, how do we, you know, create this competition or a contest or an event where we can get people to participate and contribute, and maybe they like win a Wacom prize, or maybe they're using Wacom to design the shoes and stuff like that. So we were already kind of creating these events and experiences, and some of them were branded with, you know, different footwear brands and stuff like that. And one day after a meeting, Megan and I were sitting down, and she was like, man, Portland has like all these different weeks, man. There's like a whiskey week, there's a burger week, pizza week, nacho week. She was like, why isn't there like a week for like sneakers where people like learn about sneakers? I was like, man, it's a great idea. And I was like, we need to do that. And she like looked me in the eyes. She was like, we need to do that. And I think like straight from that meeting, I went to my boss and I was Sneaker Week. And he was like, we need to do that. I mean, that was 2017. And, yeah, we're still here. We made it through the pandemic. We did a lot of virtual stuff to just kind of keep people connected and push through. And yeah, we're celebrating our, I always get it confused. I think it's about to be like seventh year, because we hosted in 2017.
When is the week? When is the week 19, this year? 20.
Doesn't make sense in math. Like it should be 2024 would be year seven. Like that's how the math in my head seems like it works.
You're looking at me and I'll tell you, man. I don't even know. Someone will say something happened in June of 2021 and I'm like, I guess it did.
Man, yeah, I'm horrible with dates, but yeah, we'll be producing our seventh year.
And when is the week?
Sneaker Week this year is August 3rd through the 9th. So we kick off with our art day for first Thursday, which is August 3rd. Friday is our design day, August 4th. August 5th is our sports day. August 6th is our music day. August 7th is our media Monday. Tech Tuesday is August 8th. Then we shut it down for our science day on Wednesday, which is August 9th. And each of those days, we host a different experience and it's at a different location. So we'll be starting at Jupiter Hotel, for our kickoff art show. We go to the Bodecker Foundation for our, design combine. and we'll be in Old Town for our sports day and our music day, and we'll be rocking at Wacom for our Tech Tuesday, and then shutting it down at OMSI on Wednesday.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm gonna go to one or more.
And it's definitely meant for you to kind of like pick and choose, you know, unless you just on vacation for, you know, a full week and you want to come visit the lovely land of Portland.
So I have a couple I have some questions for you. Mm-hmm. I have my five questions. That's later.
Okay,
but right now I'm wondering, you didn't really answer this before, so I'm curious, what is your favorite shoe or favorite shoe designer?
My favorite shoe designer is Yohji Yamamoto. His brand is under the Adidas brand. His footwear brand is under the Adidas brand, under Y3. I'm actually wearing one of those today. I've got a couple pairs, and honestly, man, it's like he pushes the boundaries and keeps things weirdly like acceptable. Like, although he's pushing the boundaries, like it's just, you know, this mix of like Asian, like European design that is always just super premium. And so, yeah, right now I'm wearing the Oswego's. Very interesting. The Oswego is like
like Oswego.
It's called the Oswego. I don't know if it was influenced by Lake Oswego, but I wouldn't doubt it. Given that, you know, Adi has been out here for quite some time and possibly influenced. But he just remixes like traditional Adidas, and then he makes them his own, and they're always just like super cool, just super random. But yeah,
what is, in your opinion, the best cheap shoe?
Mm-hmm. The best cheap shoe?
Yeah,
the best cheap shoe. And what's cheap?
Oh, I don't know.
Under $20? Like under under $60? I think a good affordable option is like the Adidas Stan Smith. It used to be like around $65-$75. I'm not too sure how much it is now, but that, like, it's dressed up, like dressed down, like you can do both with them. You can't go wrong with Chuck Taylors. All Chuck's All Stars, can't go wrong with those unless you have skinny feet.
I was just gonna say I love them, but they don't have support.
Yeah So I mean, you gotta just roll with what you got, you know. You could put like an extra sock, like back in the day we would put socks to add, you know, cushion, or to you can like style them and make them like puffier if you didn't want to just wear them super thin. But yeah,
and then I mean, same question,
but they're getting expensive now though.
Yeah,
Vans Vans are very affordable. They got the skate highs and lows. Just pick and choose, and they come in like so many different flavors. Those are some good affordable options.
Great. What about best, most expensive shoe or pricey shoe?
The best one? I don't agree with shoes being pricey. Like this, it sounds so such like the opposite of what I should be saying, right? I should be, get some. I mean, these shoes.
What would you?
These shoes are like $300.
Okay, that's pricey for me. I'm pretty frugal.
Okay, so I wear them like damn near every day.
Well, that's what I was gonna ask you. What's a shoe you have that cost more, but you spent it because it was worth it?
And I really haven't spent more than $300 on a shoe. I have shoes that are worth more than $300. But I either like were gifted those shoes, or like, yeah, they're just priceless to me. And I like wait for shoes to get marked down. So like, yeah, these shoes were $300, but I didn't pay $300. Yeah, I think I paid like $150. I went to the Adidas.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Ross. Yeah, dress for less.
You can go to Ross. Like, I've definitely gotten shoes out of Ross. Cleats too, like, you know, like all type of stuff out of Ross. But Portland, you're just like one or two people away from getting 50% off, you know? So why pay full price? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I hear that. Okay. Next question. Are there a limited amount of shoes that are made? I don't know this. So if something becomes wanted or collectible, can't they just make more? Is it like currency? Like, they can't keep printing money?
Well, because you're asking somebody very knowledgeable about the industry. So if you look at a factory, these factories are like 10 miles long sometimes. Like, they're like a mile long. Like, they're these super long factories, right? And to produce a certain pair of shoes, you have to like load up all the materials. You have to get the right, you know, patterns ready. You have to prep the assembly line in a way that maximizes like that short amount of time, and they knock out as many shoes as they can. As soon as you stop producing that shoe, it's on to the next shoe. So to try to reproduce some shoes, like any minute on an assembly line is money. And so, like, there's some people that there's some collections, so there's a term of like GR, which is like general release, and those, you know, are in the tens of thousands, or tens of hundreds of thousands. Then there's like the limited edition, like the limited releases, and those are like probably less than a couple thousand shoes. But you got to think about it. If you're shutting down a whole assembly line to put together, you know, just 100 to 1,000 pairs of shoes, like, it's going to cost you a lot of money, because you have to mark up the shoe that much, because you're basically setting up something that's supposed to be meant for scale to do in a small quantity. And so you're just wasting money by not doing a large quantity. And so they're typically marked up, because
if that shoe does well,
Never make your money off of limited releases. You never make your money. You're just losing money. So it's always like a marketing play. It's to build the brand awareness.
So they purposefully make less.
Yeah.
And then next question is, can anybody become a shoe designer? Like, how does someone become a shoe designer? Tell us.
What did I say? If you have a body, you're an athlete. That's Nike's slogan.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I guess I'm an athlete.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's how they look at it. And I worked for Nike for a little bit, and like, we were always trained on, you know, if you have a body, you're an athlete, and they have, you know, all their slogans and maxims and ethos. And I admire the philosophy of being so inclusive. I understand that is a huge selling tool to, like, hey, you know, we're not going to exclude anybody's money, you know, out of this equation. But the idea of like, making people feel included and motivating and being such an aspirational brand to where, you know, someone like yourself or myself can compare themselves to someone that literally spends their entire life working out, being a athlete. And we feel just as empowered, right? You know, by a slogan like that.
We're in the shape of Olympians.
Man, right? You know? Well, they definitely don't say if you have a body, you're an Olympian. But what was the question?
So can anybody be a shoe designer? Maybe it's that you can, but you might just be able to order one. You can't mass produce all of your shoes.
Well, there's, you can be a shoe designer. Doesn't mean that your shoes are going to get produced. You know, you can be just throwing out ideas and you can call yourself a designer. But what a lot of people don't know is, in most instances with like these larger companies, there's multiple roles to making a shoe. So there's not one person that does everything. You know, like the quote unquote designer is not sketching something out and then making a prototype and then cutting the patterns and then sewing it together and then boxing it up and creating a campaign. Like all of those are different jobs. And so there is a footwear designer, the person that's creating a lot of the functionality of a shoe or the aesthetic of the shoe itself. But you know, there's other designers that are helping bring it to life. Like there's a color designer. You know, there's such thing as a color designer where you and I could be wearing the same shoe, but they'll be in two different colors, right? Like the designer's not creating those different colorways. The color designer's creating those different colors. You got shoes that have been designed, you know, 30 years ago that are still getting new colors added to them, right? There's those different roles. So it depends on, you know, hey, do you feel like you have a very keen eye on, you know, how colors work together in telling color stories?
So if I draw a shoe design and I want it to be made, I feel overly confident. How do I get it to Adidas or Nike? Do I have to work there? How does one go from...
Yeah, you're better off looking for, if you just want a one-on-one, one-of-one, there's people that do like custom work for footwear, which is going to be like the most affordable and most reasonable option. Trying to get a large brand like a Nike or Adidas to produce your shoe is like, man, I have worked on a project like that before, but that's like a miracle, you know? So... Mm-hmm. You're better off
unless you're Serena or something like that.
Yeah. Unless you're somebody like that, somebody high caliber where is going to build the brand, you know? For folks that are either looking to get their own shoe made or have a desire to see a concept come to life, you're better off reaching out to somebody online that knows how to make shoes. But you got to prepare to like compensate that person for their time. Cause it's a long process to make shoes. But there's a lot of people that are out there educating themselves on how to make shoes, you know, like doing a simple deconstruction of a shoe, like somebody, you know, that knows their way around a sewing machine, because really, they all kind of start off as like flat patterns. And so if you are good with, you know, sewing things together on a sewing machine and you have some materials that aren't going to break that needle, like, you know, if you want to make something out of canvas or something like that. There's places that will sell you a sole. You can go into the store and just buy the bottom of the shoe. You know, you can buy yourself a fabric. You can maybe print out a pattern and, you know, you'll have yourself a shoe at the end of the day. But, people pay for these type of shoes because the processes and the materials are not so regular, and they're made in a way where, you know, these are experts putting something together. So it's like you drawing something for the first time and trying to frame it and sell it versus like a Picasso, you know. So you're gonna see a stark difference of you like making your own shoe.
Are there independent people who are like, I'm gonna make my own shoe? I guess they'd have to form a company around their designs.
I mean, those are the people that I like to work with, that I'm inspired by. Folks that want to put something out there in the world, they typically have a reason behind it, something that inspires them. I love working with folks that are trying to create their own brand, because it always has a mission and a message behind it. And so it's really easy for me to get behind a real positive, impactful message. And, you know, it's a lot to try to do all that yourself. So it's something that I enjoy collaborating with folks that, hey, I have this really dope idea. You know, I have XYZ experience with making shoes before. I've got some connections with people that can manufacture it. Like, I have this idea of like what this brand can be, and, you know, just my experience from working with other brands and, you know, working within the footwear industry, I love being able to kind of, you know, share my two cents and my perspective on like either where the market's going or, you know, how to really connect with folks, or, you know, just how to bring the mission to life in creative ways. So, yeah, that's really my lane. But
how did you become interested in this? Like, were you creative as a child or a teenager?
I think I was very creative, growing up, just like, as I can remember, I was kind of like creative slash like weird, I guess. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. And so it was a very, it was a stereotypical stories that you hear about, South Central. Like, it was a lot of gang violence. It was a lot of drugs in the '90s. It was, you know, just a lot of crazy stuff going on. And so, those were a lot of influences that a lot of people had, that I grew up with and that I went to school with. And I don't want to say that I was like sheltered to it, you know, cause I was very much exposed to it. But my interest was just like, I didn't really like basketball. I liked football. I liked cartoons and I liked to draw. And so like, that was like the world that I created for myself. And like, those were things that I focused on. And, so I was like always drawing stuff and I was, you know, luckily enough, like people liked, and I was like kind of talented enough. So you remember like those folders where people would like slide pictures and stuff in?
Yeah.
I would just like draw people pictures and like try to sell them for like $5-$10. Like, I was drawing like Pokemon stuff and, Dragon Ball Z characters. Like, I would draw people like their favorite characters and they would just like put it in their binder. And then in like middle school, it started to get like too cheesy, you know? And then, so from there I started like, I started getting into football and I started to like draw like shoes a lot more. And I was really getting like introduced into shoes of like, hey, like here's another way I can express myself. And so I would never be able to afford, like the, all the cool, like Jordans and stuff like that. But, and one was like really popular at the time. And like, and one used to, they had like more affordable shoes. Eventually, like when I got into high school, I was still like, you know, liking shoes. I still couldn't afford them. But I was learning to take that creativity of like, okay, hey, I don't have the shoes that I want. I know how to draw. Like, can I turn these shoes that I have into like some cooler shoes? And so I started like painting and customizing shoes. And then, you know, my friends, you know, they would see my shoes and be like, oh man, can you do those to my shoes? So then I kind of took that same hustle from, drawing people pictures. And then I would like, you know, customize their shoes. And so it was a slow transition into, from like being like weird, like drawing cartoons all day, into like, okay, cool, I'm gonna customize some shoes for, you know, the Sadie Hawkins dance, or, you know, like grad night, or, you know, any special occasion, like, you know, or somebody got a brand new jersey and now they need to choose a master jersey, or, you know, can't afford new shoes and want to, you know, reclaim those. So
people are like, damn, look at those shoes,
man. Hey, you know, there was definitely times where people, I didn't do it intentionally to try to like advertise my services through my shoes. But it ended up happening. But it was a tedious process.
Did you get paid?
I did get paid. I used to, you know, charge like $30-$40 plus the paint. Nice. So I was like, whatever colors you want, like, you know, here's where to go get.
Did you use the money from decorating shoes to buy new shoes?
Yeah, I think that's how it went. It was that, and like, it was shoes and clothes, because all the clothes that I wanted just cost too much, and my parents weren't trying to buy them. And all the shoes that I wanted cost too much and my parents didn't want to buy them. But like I said, like, that was when you don't have exposure to other ways of like filling that void or that, or being connected to your passion, like the only way is to like buy and consume, you know? And I was like in that point of like, do I continue to consume or do I feel like, do I pursue this vision of mine to create? And like at my age, like at 18, like in South Central, like, what are you talking about? You want to create shoes? Like that didn't even make sense. It was like, okay, well, hey, you still playing football. So either you got a scholarship or you're trying to go to a junior college. Right. And, you know, I definitely not trying to go through like the drug dealing and the gangbanger routes. I would have been out on my own if that was like anything that I considered. But my parents were, they were cool with me pursuing sports, and they just didn't understand like what, how, like if I was even going to get paid from designing shoes. And I was working at a retail store in Santa Monica, Adidas retail store on the Santa Monica Pier. And I was going to school part-time.
Is that like Third Street Promenade?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Third Street Promenade. I was going to school part-time. I was playing football. And like, I really didn't want to play football no more because it felt like it turned into a job. You know, it was just like, I don't know. I was just, felt like I was being forced to play. And it was like, in college, it was so much more serious than high school. And I was working retail. So I was like getting money to like fulfill my, you know, whatever I needed. I was still living at home, so like all the money I was just collecting. And I was working at a brand, and it was like my first time going beyond the product. It was like, you know, during training, they tell you all about the history of the brand. Like they tell you all about like the designs of each shoe, like all the performance, you know, because you're supposed to sell it. And so they're telling you about all these performance attributes, and like you're learning the difference between these different foams and these different leathers and this designer and that designer. And people knew like I would paint shoes and stuff like that, and I wanted to be a designer. So one day, a group of designers from Portland visited the store, and like on the walkie-talkie, they were like, because people knew that I wanted to be a designer, they were like, "Hey, Herbert, there's some designers in our store," and you know, they were like telling me like what they were wearing, so like I can find them. They were like, "Yeah, you know, it's these three people over here wearing black, blah 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 blah," and yeah, I approached them. I told them like, you know, all about the stuff that I was doing, and they were like, "Oh man, have you ever heard of industrial design?" And I was like, "Oh no, I haven't. Like, what is that? Like, you know, what is industrial design? Like making tools or stuff? Like, you know, I had no clue about what that was." And they told me all about like, you know, product design and industrial design, the different majors that footwear designers would need, because there's no footwear design degree, you know, you don't get that. And they just like opened my eyes, and like the dude that I met, his name was Jason Calderon, he's like, "Yeah, man, well, you should check out this school in Portland. It's called, it's the Art Institute."
Did he tell you that you were a shoe-in? Do you get it?
Man, I've been on a podcast called the Shoe-In Podcast. But yeah, it was just like, that was like the game changer. Like once I knew that I could do what I wanted to do, you know, it was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And then I quit playing football. I filled out an application for the Art Institute. I studied industrial design, and there was like a small group of folks that were there, and they were all like whispering about this school called Pencil that taught footwear design specifically. And yeah, I applied there as well, finally got in, and yeah, the rest is history. That's kind of how, you know, I got to meet my mentor. Worked my way up from the marketing designer, and you know, it's my introduction to Megan and start a sneaker week.
Nice. Well, that's a story with soul.
Jeez Louise.
I'm sorry. Horrible dad jokes. Okay. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. So it's I have the five questions I ask all of our guests. So the first one is, what is your favorite childhood memory?
My favorite childhood memory, I went to a high school that wasn't too far from the beach. And my favorite memory was...
Santa Monica High? Where'd you go?
No, I went to Pacific Palisades.
Oh, you fancy.
It's not too far from Santa Monica. But yeah, it was a fancy charter school. But yeah, my sister went there. They bus a lot of kids from the inner city out there to those schools that wanted to wake up on time. And one time, man, just like me and my friends, we just like ditched school. Well, we ditched like this after program that we were doing. And we went down to the beach. And we just had like a magical time, man. I won't get into details about what we did, but it was really cool.
Yeah. We were in high school. I mean, I imagine you drank or smoked or something like that.
We'll just imagine what could have been.
You could have gone to the pier and like went on the Ferris wheel and got cotton candy, something innocent like that.
Yeah, you know, and like there was like it was like another group of girls that were out there that like we knew too. It turned into like a magical moment. It was like something out of like a movie of just like
a different kind of movie.
No. It definitely was. It was appropriate for the most part.
What have you been watching or reading these days?
I've been reading. I need to continue to read this book. I haven't read anything out of it in like the last 2 weeks. But there's a book called Exit Rich. It's really helpful. I've been on like this kind of self-education kick as of recently. And as an entrepreneur, it just teaches you like whether you're someone that's starting a business, that currently has a business or looking to purchase a business. And you want to figure out how to make money off of that business, that you need to understand, you know, your exit strategy and develop that business specifically for your exit. And so the same way that brands look at consumers and say, hey, you know, Mike really likes colorful things. You know, he wants something that's going to fit him well and, you know, speak to his personality. Like you as an entrepreneur need to be looking at the buyer, which could be, you know, a corporation, a larger company, and those are your consumers. And you need to understand what are their wants and what are their needs and their desires. And you need to position your business as something that they want to buy. And, you know, it's really the way they lay it out makes it seem so simple. It's a lot of work to get there. But, you know, the easiest way is just looking at similar companies that they've already bought that are similar to yours. Like, what are the requirements in the portfolio?
And then what happens? We're all like sitting at a resort or on our yacht
after you exit rich.
Yeah. You're like, that's I'm the rich. Plan, right? Bye, bitch. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, you can curse on here?
You can cuss, yeah.
Man.
You didn't know that it was explicit the whole time.
I know. Well, hey, that's part of me. Sometimes
Say something now. I'll get it out.
I'm not in that mode right now. It's going to be hard for me to curse. But I definitely did not grow. I grew up cursing.
Yeah.
Now I try to go into that professional mode and
I appreciate that, but this is an unfiltered podcast. What's a quote or mantra you live by? You can cuss there in that question.
Man, it doesn't even have a curse word in there. It's if you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready.
Bitches. Just add bitches. If you stay ready, you don't got to get ready.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is that?
That's from a that is from a pimp named Sugar Free.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, if you stay ready, you don't got to get ready. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
You just got to have that mentality that you're ready for anything, and if it ever comes a situation,
it makes me think of
you don't always have to like hold up.
It makes me think of Tiffany Haddish because she says she ready.
Oh, she ready. Yeah, I do know her. She's from South Central too. So
I love Tiffany Haddish. What keeps you up at night?
My baby.
What about like social issues besides your baby?
Social issues.
Your baby being in this world.
Yeah, I mean, just like the breaking the cycle for my family, you know, creating generational wealth, those things.
Yeah, let's work on exiting rich.
Yeah, right.
And then finally, give some shout outs to people who might be listening. And then also, how can people find you or learn more about Sneaker Week PDX?
Yeah, shout out to my beautiful wife. I love you so much, Brianna Michelle Swift. Shout out to my daughter, Ileana Christina. Shout out to my mom, my dad. I'm going to make them listen to this now because I'm giving everybody a shout out.
And because you didn't cuss.
Yeah. And well, they're going to be like, well, why the fuck didn't you cuss?
Oh, okay. You know? Yeah. So, okay.
So that's where I learned it from, to be honest with you, from them. Shout out to my sister, strong, beautiful woman, Deanna. You know Deanna.
I know Dee, yeah.
She was my sister?
I didn't know she was your sister, yeah. I did, okay, yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, she's Black Excellence.
Yeah, right? Shout out to Megan. She's always been holding it down. She's one of the ride or die partners. One of my best friends, Jonathan Riley, of Better Marketing. He's been a partner of Sneaker Week. They do great work for the community as well. Shout out to my homie Chucky, Chef Arthur Doolin. He won Chopped. He's out here, executive chef right now of Eagles Landing. We grew up together. We were in that same boat. We were playing football, and I was like, man, I want to do shoes. And he was like, I want to be a chef. And
look at you. You know, yeah, that's awesome.
Now he's out there killing it, and I'm killing it. Shout out to my mentor, Dwayne. Yeah. I mean, I can keep going. Do I need to keep going?
It's up to you. We have time if you want, but
yeah, shout out to the folks at Index. Shout out to Mikey and T. Those are people that I always looked up to. Shout out to Katsu from Compound and Kiriko. He's always been a real believer in me. Shout out to our sponsors. Let's give them some love. You know, I'm thankful for the folks at Travel Portland. They've always been looking out. They've been some good believers in Sneaker Week and the vision. Yeah, shout out to Suchetta Ball. You know, she's always, you know Sue?
Don't.
Sue's legit.
But anybody you think is cool, I probably will think is cool. So I'm happy to meet these people.
Yeah, shout out to Rukaya Adams. You know,
yeah, I don't know her personally, but yeah, I know her. I've heard her speak. She gave a TED talk.
Yeah, she's like big sis status. We were just recently on a panel together, and just anytime I hear her, and the fact that she's just like always reinforces me, I'm grateful for. Shout out to John McIsaac. He's my PR agent, and he's just been a game changer. I don't know where I'd be without her, man.
Shout out to my makeup artist, my stylist. Shout out
to my stylist, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
shout out to all my friends, the people that I was telling you with the family of 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, all my folks on Budlong and 35th, man. Shout out to the Webbs and the Murphys.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
How can people find you? How can people find out more about Sneaker Week PDX?
Yeah, you can find out more about Sneaker Week PDX. All of our social handles are at Sneaker Week PDX. Our website is sneakerweekpdx.com. And yeah, we'll be rolling out all the details for 2023 next month. So make sure that you're just checked in. You can subscribe and become a member to our mailing list. But we'll be shooting all that information out on social. If you are looking to reach me personally, my phone number is... I'm just kidding.
No, I was gonna say, don't give out your number. You are gonna add a class to the Sneaker Week though called Exit Rich Bitches.
Oh shit, maybe. You see now, like I don't even feel comfortable cursing. Like I feel like
Exit Rich.
Yeah. Exit Rich though is a good one. A story brand is a good another good book.
Bring it down. I am writing these books down.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a great book.
There's that nerd. Okay. Really enjoyed interviewing you. Thanks for doing my podcast. Enjoy becoming friends with you.
Mm-hmm.
And just happy you're in our community doing great work. So thank you.
Yeah. When does this air?
Who knows? We're looking at.
Say, can we promote Thursday?
We're looking at Kyle. We're probably a couple weeks out. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it'll premiere before Sneaker Week, though.
Okay, and make sure y'all come to Sneaker Week. And I'm looking forward to a potential collaboration with Rational Unicorn to educate y'all.
Yeah.
We're gonna try to do something elevated, maybe.
Yeah.
Making an experience.
Yeah, wherever. The expression is, I bloom where I'm planted. That's the expression.
Boom. Yeah, if you want to follow me, though, just to get my followers up, it's at BEAUCLERE.
He's going to be giving shout-outs for another hour. Kyle's looking at us.
Hey,
shout out to my grocery store. Shout out to my barber.
Oh, man.
Shout out to my mom. Shout out to my postman. Who else?
Shout out to my therapist.
Therapy, yeah, important.
That was a faint, iconic line from Ron Artesi. Yeah. Metal World Peace. After the Lakers won the championship, he gave an interview on the court. He's like, shout out to my therapist, man. She's been holding me down.
The
only person he shouted out.
Your favorite quote should be, I'm just here to get paid.
Man, I'm just here to get paid. Well, but that would be inaccurate. You know?
It's true.
I'm here to make people's lives better. But if you stay ready, you're going to do it.
End scene.